everybody. Bill Buckmaster along with my friend Ray Allen. Mr. Allen, engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass, but together we welcome you to the midweek edition of Buckmaster. It is January 25th, 2017. Hope the week's going well so far. We come to you from Tucson's very powerful AM station, AM 1030, with, as they say in the business, very good reach all over southern Arizona. And of course, if you're not in front of a radio, but you're by a computer, you can hear the program anywhere in the world on my website, buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. And if you missed a portion of the program, we have all of our podcasts and really almost all of the shows that we have done over the past 6 years here with the radio project. The Buckmaster Show live line 790-2040 for your calls, questions, suggestions, and we're on Twitter at Buckmaster Show. Let's go now right on the live line up to the capital of Arizona, up to Phoenix. J.D. Massard, Republican from Gilbert, is the speaker of the Arizona House of Representatives. Mr. Speaker, how are you today?
I am well. How are you?
Doing very well. How would you characterize your role so far as Speaker? We're a little bit into a couple of weeks now into this session. How does it look for you?
You know, so far things are running pretty smoothly. The feedback has been positive on both sides of the aisle, actually. And, you know, we're just now getting to a point where some of the bills that have been at the committee stage are making their way to the floor. So probably starting next week, we're going to have a lot more floor action. And we'll have some disagreements, obviously. But so far, everyone's keeping it polite and civil, and that's what I like to see.
Are both sides working together this session?
Well, we actually have had some Democratic bills already be heard in committee, which is unusual. I've been assigning Democratic bills to committee, which I think is a bit of a change from the past, and they've expressed their appreciation that, you know, I'm not throwing up roadblocks or anything. So they can push the issues they would like to push. They may have a bit of a harder time on some issues, given that it's a Republican majority, but I'll give them a fair shot.
What about tax reform? Is that still at the top of your agenda?
Certainly, tax reform is something I continue to be passionate about. I'm also sensitive to the fiscal restraints that we face in terms of the budget and the impact that that some tax reductions might have. Of course, you can have tax reform without tax reductions. I'm going to continue to look at that. But to be honest, right now my priority is the House and the Republican caucus agenda. And so I'm really focused more on that and probably will look over the interim in preparation for next year on major tax reform issues.
What is the first issue really of business that needs to be taken care of, in your opinion?
We're laying the groundwork for the budget and trying to figure out how we adapt to the implementation of Prop 206. That's the minimum wage increase and how it's going to impact a number of state agencies. I think there are some areas that are going to be a little more costly now. And so, you know, we're looking at between 25 and maybe as much as $75 million that we're going to have to allocate in some areas. So we're still wrapping our hands around what that impact is going to be, what the dollars are going to be. That's probably the most immediate thing.
And how does that impact education?
Unfortunately, you know, when you're dealing with limited resources, it has the potential to impact what we would otherwise be allocating towards education. There's only so much money to go around, and this is now, you know, let's say it's a $50 million cost. I suspect, certainly the governor's laid out K-12 as a focus. I think my caucus and the legislature itself is in agreement with that. Unfortunately, there's just less now that we can allocate when you have, you know, upwards of $50 million that has to go to these other areas for the minimum wage cost.
The governor's budget, of course, includes what some teachers say is basically chump change and an insult. Some of them have been very insulted by $225 more per teacher the first year. Some are even asking, why do it at all?
Yeah, I think I can appreciate the small amount. You know, the governor has set a course. I think that's the important thing. And what I would expect is in coming years, even if we can't do as much this year as we might like to, for reasons I just mentioned, like Prop 206 and the cost of that, at least this sets the course for future years. And I suspect that as revenues increase, or if we find other sources of revenues, you know, outside of maybe increasing taxes or something, I think you will see those go to the areas at a higher rate. And there are some possibilities out there in the coming years. So certainly we want to get more money to our teachers. They deserve it. They are overworked, underpaid. I and many believe that here. The governor certainly does. This is a step, and it's a small step, but it's one that's needed. And I adhere to the belief that something is better than nothing, especially if it sets us up for more later.
What about building maintenance? This is a huge issue, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I've said this everywhere I speak on the issue. I brought up building maintenance because, you know, we haven't been funding building maintenance as much as we should be. And that was, again, for budget constraints. And that will be part of the mix, you know, what part of the revenues that we have will go to capital versus other areas like teacher salaries and classroom spending. And that's always the balance. You know, capital funding isn't as sexy an issue. You know, it's not going to teachers per se, but we need to make sure our classrooms are up to par. And there's also some legal implications if we don't.
Isn't that part of the Arizona Constitution? Aren't the lawmakers mandated to take care of our schools?
Yeah, and it's the Constitution doesn't specifically talk about capital, but it does talk about K-12, and there was a lawsuit related to a constitutional interpretation related to capital funding, which is what I was alluding to earlier when I talked about the legal ramifications. We are constitutionally obligated to have a free public school system, to have a what's called a general and uniform, that's the exact phrase in the Constitution, system, and you know, we're doing the very best to make sure that we comply with that.
What about this carrying weapons on the House floor? What is your decision on that? There's been some confusion over this.
Well, so I'm not sure exactly what the confusion would be, but let me just say, we're not going to allow for weapons in the House, as they aren't allowed in other state buildings. We have gun lockers for those who come, and I fully respect and support, and I'm one of the biggest supporters of the Second Amendment. So we provide those lockers. We provide security for the House as well. You know, in fairness, I would say that the policy isn't going to be implemented in such a way that I'm going to be frisking people or making, you know, checking bags or purses or that sort of thing. But, you know, I certainly, if someone is carrying, you know, openly, that would be a problem.
And there are, I'm sure, security in place up there with the metal detectors.
Yeah, we do have enhanced security in the House, absolutely.
All right, we're going to take a break right here with J.D. Massard, Republican from Chandler. He is the Speaker of the Arizona House. If you would like to join in the conversation, 790-2040, 790-2040 for your questions. We'll be right back with the Speaker. Oh, and I do want, before we do take the break, Ray, thank you for reminding me, we want to tell you about our fine sponsor, Green Things. And yes, last night was very, very chilly, certainly freezing and below in many parts of the Tucson area. They have these fabulous frost cloths available over at Green Things. So give that some consideration over at 3384 East River Road, just west of the intersection of Dodge and River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. GreenThingsAZ.com. We'll be right back.
La cucaracha, la cucaracha. Hi, I'm Dr. Kevin Lehman. Not a very good singer, am I? But you know what? Cockroaches aren't a pleasant subject, and we had them. And I called my friend Shelby Hawkins over at Five Star Termite and Pest Control, and guess what? No more cockroaches. Adios, cucaracha. Hasta mañana. No más.
We're Five Star Pest Control. We know what bugs you.
The excitement is building for the grand opening in early 2017 for the Twisted Tandoor. The legendary Indian food truck will now have a permanent brick-and-mortar home at Swan and Camp Lowell Drive. The menu will be an expansion of the Indian classic offerings from the original Twisted Tandoor food truck. The Twisted Tandoor, coming in early 2017 at 4660 East Camp Lowell Drive.
Traveling is more than just the flight. It's the whole experience. In money saved, in time saved. And with almost 60 flights a day taking off from Tucson International Airport nonstop to San Diego, Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Oakland, San Francisco, Salt Lake City, Denver, Portland, Seattle, Dallas, Houston, Minneapolis, Chicago, Atlanta, New York, and easy one-stop connections to hundreds of destinations around the world, you can get there from here. Travel smart. Travel TUS and flytucson.com. It's the way to go.
The Regional Transportation Authority and its members are working together to deliver transportation improvements to our region. More than 770 improvements have been completed to date. The success of the RTA is built upon collaboration and leadership that focuses on addressing our regional mobility needs to make our region a safer, more efficient, and more vibrant place to live. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com. As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Hi, this is Sean McCluskey, co-owner and designated broker for Rincon Ventures. If you're a rental owner by choice or by accident, and you're looking to hire or change property management companies, consider Rincon Ventures. We employ an aggressive web-based advertising strategy to market your rental. We thoroughly screen prospective tenants and conduct routine property inspections. Our online system gives tenants the ability to pay rent and file maintenance requests instantly over the web. Our owners can use the same system to instantly check on their properties. Call Rincon Ventures at 881-2258 or visit us on the web at rvprop.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com. Welcome back. Pushing 12:18 now on this midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show on AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's Voice, with live streaming at buckmastershow.com and KVOI.com. J.D. Masnard is Masnard. Am I mispronouncing your name? How do you say it?
It's pronounced Masnard. But if it makes you feel any better, my dad and I don't say it the same way. So.
Masnard. All right. Representative Speaker of the House for Arizona, only 35 years old. You may be, I don't know if anyone has looked this up, but you may be one of the youngest speakers of the House.
Yeah, I am one of the youngest. I'm not the youngest, maybe the youngest looking, but I'm actually 36 years old, and there was a previous speaker who was 35, and then I heard years, like decades ago, there was someone who was temporarily speaker who may have been like 33 or 34, but yeah, I'm one of the youngest in the country too, but it's an honor either way, and I did come in with some experience, so I I had a bit of an advantage there.
Could you give us a brief background? What experience was that?
So before I ran for office, and I'm now in my last term in the House. So I've been in here for 6 years. This is my seventh year in the House. I served 8 years on staff as a policy advisor in the state Senate. So I have essentially about 14, 15 years of state policy making experience, one as a policy advisor, now as a policy maker. And so that certainly gave me an edge. And I know very well how state government works, in particular, how the legislative process works. And I think that's one of the reasons I had the honor of being elevated to this position.
What going back to the budget watchers seem to have a couple of different opinions on where we are right now about where the rainy day fund is. From a fiscal point of view, what's your understanding of where Arizona is at this point?
So I would say we're doing okay. And frankly, I consider okay or fair, or, you know, slightly doing well, a success, because for a while we were not doing well at all. We had a major deficit. Structural shortfalls. We were doing really one of the worst as far as states compare on a per capita basis in the country. I think we were neck and neck with California. And now we, for the first time, really have achieved a structurally balanced budget, which is, like I said, a huge accomplishment. We do have money in the rainy day fund. Turns go in the economy, which technically may not feel that great, but we are on the upswing of an economic development. We really need to be prepared for when the cycle goes down. No one forecasts a recession, but they happen. So I'm glad we have about $450 million in the rainy day fund. As a percentage of our overall budget, it's really not the best. It's about 7%, but it's better than zero. And so I'd say we're doing okay.
From what I understand, the president, Mr. Trump, will be signing an executive order today about creating some have said 30, 40 foot tall border wall. And I'm just wondering, from an economic point of view, how you feel that might impact Arizona, a state where, from my understanding, there's 100,000 Arizonans who depend on Mexico and trade for their livelihood.
Yeah, we just need to make sure as we increase border security, which I support doing, whether, you know, in the form of a wall or various ways, you know, we can talk about the best strategy, but I am strongly in support of increasing border security. But at the same time, we do want a healthy immigration policy as well. And yes, there are businesses, especially along the border, who depend on that labor. And so we just need a legal process that's understandable, that works, that's not full of holes, so that there isn't the negative economic consequence. And frankly, what we'd be hoping for, frankly, is a positive one, because those who are here illegally, they may be well intended. I may like them as people, but there is a cost to our education system, to our medical system, and then of course the bad actors. There's a cost to the prison system, and we can't ignore that either. So I appreciate what the president is trying to do. We just need to make sure that at the end of the day, we have both border security as well as a legal immigration process that works.
You know, we talked about guns earlier at the Capitol, and one of our listeners wants me to clarify: it is not against state law to have guns in governmental buildings unless the manager of the said building posts a sign. So we wanted to clarify that.
Yeah, so, right, which has been pretty much the case with state buildings, that there are signs. But it's true, you have a Second Amendment right. Unless a sign notifies you that, you know, it's not okay, then it obviously changes the circumstance.
Mr. Speaker, folks here complain a lot about the condition of our roads. They believe that some of the highway user funds are diverted. Yeah. And now there's talk, the new head of the House Committee on Transportation and Infrastructure is talking about a 10-cent a gallon increase in the state gasoline tax. And, of course, that would have to go to voters to approve that. Is that correct?
It wouldn't have to go to voters. The requirement with increasing tax taxes or fees is that it gets a two-thirds vote of the legislature, which is very difficult. So sometimes that's why they will instead go to the voters. But you know, we could do that in house. You know, I appreciate what Mr. Campbell, who is the chair, is trying to do. We have, as fuel economies have improved, we've seen a decline in this tax revenue that goes to roads and infrastructure. And look, I'm about as anti-tax as they come, but some taxes are needed for infrastructure. I don't know that I'd be on board with a tax increase, but there needs to be an acknowledgement that we have declining revenue. And the current system, which is based on gallons used, is obviously impacted. Heck, we're transitioning to electric cars or other forms that don't even pay a gas tax because of the very nature of the way they get around. So all of that needs to be looked at. I think the chairman is trying to get that discussion going. Whether this is the right solution, you know, I think there are challenges anytime you're going to increase taxes, but I appreciate his motivation.
Let's talk a little bit about school vouchers. One of your colleagues at the legislature, Debbie Lasko, a Republican from Peoria, state senator, has talked about adding vouchers for private and some parochial schools.
Yeah, so actually what she's proposing is an expansion of what are called empowerment scholarship accounts. We technically don't have a voucher system, though many feel like this looks very similar, and there's a lot of truth to that. Currently, these ESA programs, you're only eligible for them if you come from very specific types of backgrounds, like military kids or failing schools and that sort of thing. What she wants to, and about a third, actually, of our students are under the current eligibility. What she's proposing is universal eligibility. What she's not proposing is universal in the sense that, you know, we could have 1 million students get ESAs. There's actually a cap on the program. So I think it's right now about 3,500 students of our 1.1 million can get ESAs or get ESAs. She's not touching the cap, but she is talking about the eligibility.
What do you think about the so-called ethnic studies debate? That's been a very hot issue with schools here in Southern Arizona.
Yeah, the ethnic studies issue, you're right, has been a topic, especially in Southern Arizona. You know, it's interesting. I've never attended one. I hear about them. At the end of the day, what we want is to make sure that there aren't folks out there using taxpayer money to promote, race superiority or racism or prejudice in any way, shape, or form, whether it's promoting, you know, white, black, Latino, it doesn't matter. That's different, of course, than fostering conversations about differences in races and appreciating your ethnic background and that sort of thing. So I'm okay with the latter, not okay with the former. And, of course, these ethnic studies discussions have been derived from a feeling that the former is what's happening, these more sort of prejudices, and that's what we really want to make sure isn't happening.
What do you think about taxing internet sales?
So I have made the point before that we need a sales tax policy that is consistent and broad-based as it applies to whether it's brick-and-mortar retail or online retail sales, especially as we transition more and more to online. I'm a big Amazon user. And so that's what I'm looking for, is tax policy that's fair and equitable. I, as a result, have expressed support for going down the road of taxing online sales, but not as a means of grabbing more revenue. In other words, what I have proposed in the past is saying, okay, if we're going to start taxing online sales, which would require an act of Congress, by the way, what I would like to see is a reduction in taxes elsewhere, so that at the end of the day, the state isn't taking more from our taxpayers, that the conversation about taxing online sales is not seen as a money grab or an opportunity for more revenue so much as it is about the right tax policy.
What was your background? Were you raised as a Republican, J.D.?
I was raised in a pretty conservative household, and obviously the issues are my own, and I don't always agree with my family on everything, but we agree on most things. My mom is actually on the Chandler City Council, and every once in a while we don't quite align on things, but we're pretty close.
And some have called Mr. Trump not a Republican or a Democrat, but let's see if I get this right. The Wall Street Journal called him a progressive independent. I believe that's what they called
progressive
him.
Progressive independent. Yeah. Well, he's not. You know, it's interesting. I guess what one person thinks is progressive, another may disagree with. Usually when I think of progressive, I think of pretty far left.
Excuse me. I got that wrong. A populist independent.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with progressive. No.
That makes a little more sense. Okay. I would agree with the populist assessment. Although I will say that so far he's governing pretty conservatively, like his appointments. And again, we're only a few weeks. So he's governing pretty conservatively with his appointments, but it takes a while to define one's political ideology. And if nothing else is true, it is this. He was not adhering to any political party prior to really to running for office. That being said, you can certainly identify one and govern as one. And so far, he appears to be governing as a pretty solid Republican. So we'll see how things turn out in the coming years.
J.D. Mesnard. Did I get that fairly close?
Mesnard, yeah.
Thanks.
It's on the first syllable, yeah.
All right. J.D., thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. You bet.
All right. J.D. Mesnard, Speaker of the Arizona House of Representatives, spending some time with us. We'll talk with the new TMA, Tucson Museum of Art Director, who also has a rather challenging last name. I guess that's the day for challenging names here on the Buckmaster Show. Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, one of our fine sponsors, urging you, take the 3-hour drive over to Silver City. There is so much to do. The full listing of the many things to do, like hiking in the Gila National Wilderness, visiting the Gila Cliff Dwellings National Monument, or just hanging out and enjoying the fun atmosphere of historic Silver City. Check out their website with the listing of things to do at southwestnewmexico.org. Also, the full listing of the many great places to stay. We'll be right back. On a changing planet, the University of Arizona's Biosphere 2 has been diving deeper and looking closer while energizing, innovating, conserving, and advancing science on an unparalleled scale to better understand the natural systems around us and to inspire our future generations. For 10 years now, UA Biosphere 2 has explored our planet's future. Come, explore it yourself. Open daily, biosphere2.org.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting from a different perspective. Dive into the culture section with the latest on the arts. Book reviews from Rebecca Guthrie. What movies are hot or not from Bob Garber. Eric Peters brings his unique point of view with his auto reviews. Check out where you could vacation regardless of the season. It is culture news from a different perspective. The Southern Arizona News Examiner. Free subscriptions at soaznewsx.com.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com.
Experience the best of the Canadian Rocky Mountains with the rail journey on Rocky Mountaineer. You'll travel alongside the powerful Kicking Horse River and pass by monumental landmarks from the early days of the National Railway. On this legendary route, you'll see postcard images around each bend, including stays in picturesque Lake Louise, with scenic tours of Jasper National Park, and much more. Contact Bon Voyage Travel to plan your Rocky Mountaineer rail journey today. Bon Voyage Travel, your travel experts.
This is Bill Buckmaster coming up Thursday at noon on The Buckmaster Show. We'll speak with freshman lawmaker State Representative Todd Clodfelter, also Jason Jacobs, head of the Reed Park Zoo here in Tucson, all happening on Buckmaster. It's Tucson's Voice, AM 1030 KVOI, with worldwide live streaming podcasts and our show archive, 6 years worth of programs at buckmastershow.com. Buckmaster Show on this midweek edition, Wednesday, the 25th of January. The Tucson Museum of Art has new leadership. He's Jeremy Mikolazak, who succeeds Robert Knight. Mr. Dr. Knight retired in January after 10 years heading up the museum, actually retired last January after 10 years heading up the museum, located at 140 North Main Avenue in historic downtown Tucson. Mr. Mikolazak comes to Tucson from Miami, where for 4 years he headed up Dade College's Museum of Art and Design. The Tucson Museum of Art has a great history in our community, 91 years of serving and being a real place of enlightenment in the Tucson area. It has an operating budget of $3.3 million. Let's welcome now Jeremy to the Buckmaster Show. How do you like Tucson so far, Jeremy?
Oh, it's fantastic. It's really an amazing community. Both my wife and I have really jumped right in, and I can't tell you the amount of just the welcome, the great welcome that we had to this community, not only in our support of moving here, but also just in getting acclimated. So it's really been a great experience the past 10 months.
What appealed to you about this particular job?
Well, I think ultimately, you know, in terms of, you know, Robert retiring, he left a great institution under his foot. And there's a dedicated board and staff that are just really, they work day in and day out to really build this institution, build our reach in this community, and really have a great vision for sort of the next chapter of TMA. With TMA is an institution that's, you know, we're nearing 100, so we've got a lot of planning and thinking ahead of us. And what I think is really great about this institution is that it's a community-built museum. This is not a museum that is, quote-unquote, municipally funded. It's really the community that keeps this institution going year after year.
This is a museum, as I said, and you have certainly acknowledged, with great history and some really great assets. And if folks have not been to the museum, and I know we have a lot of folks who visit with us seasonally and listen to the program, perhaps haven't had a chance to explore some of the attractions downtown. The Museum of Art is really a centerpiece for downtown, and I've been around a long time in this town, Jeremy, and I've seen the downtown really hit some real low points. But one thing that remained kind of a steady beacon, an artistic compass, if you will, was the Tucson Museum of Art.
Oh, sure. And I think we feel very strongly in the renaissance of what's happening downtown. We feel very fortunate to be part of it. I think there's a great sort of new group of folks investing their time and resources in addition to sort of broadening the scope of what's coming downtown. And in terms of TMA, we've done a lot of great sort of new things to sort of reinvigorate that role. We've got some great programs for first Thursday nights of the month. It's free from 5 to 8, which is actually a great partnership with the NEA. And that allows us to collaborate with many different organizations throughout the city. In addition to that, we have a second Sundays program that's also free for families, and that's really family orientated. That's through the generous support of the Stonewall Foundation. And it's really about, for us at this point, how we can bridge bridge with other entities in this community and really sort of grow our reach. I think TMA really has a big role in sort of this renaissance of what's happening downtown. And from the museums and board perspective, we feel very strongly about sort of investing funds into our property, really expanding our reach, and really utilizing the campus in a sort of a new way, looking at events and other programs that can really broaden our base and really bring a cross-section of this community to the museum.
The so-called millennials have been a driving force, certainly, in the renaissance of downtown, and trying to get millennials interested in perhaps the art museum might be a bit of a challenge, but what are you thinking in that along those terms?
Well, I think some of the things you're going to see some major program changes for next year. We've done an amazing job, or I should say the staff has done an amazing job through the leadership of Dr. Julie Sassi and Christine Brinza, our curators, in addition to other folks at the museum, to really think about what is, again, the future of TMA. We have some, we're going to sort of reinstall and reinterpret our collection. The museum's got a 9,000 object collection. We're going to be not necessarily closing this summer, but we're going to renovate certain buildings this summer and reinstall that collection come October. You're going to see a brand new institution, something that's really, it's about Tucson. These are the gems that we have in our collection. And in addition to that, you're going to see sort of a new robust exhibition schedule that's going to relate, again, to a much more diverse section of this community, appealing to both the millennials and sort of our seasoned patrons.
I like that idea. You know, you come to Tucson Museum of Art, you want to see some Tucson-based art. So sure. This is going to, sounds like you're doing kind of a reset.
Absolutely. We've got a great new gallery that we are installing as a permanent collection gallery. It's called the Gallery of the Southwest Region, and that's primarily Tucson and the Sonoran Desert region. Again, having that opportunity to represent the artists within our community. We've got an amazing roster of artists that live and work within this region, not just part-time, but full-time as well. And it's really an opportunity for the museum to highlight these particular artists, in addition to highlighting sort of the historic aspect to this region as well.
We're speaking with Jeremy Mikolajczak. He is the director, CEO of the Tucson Museum of Art, and part of the portfolio of the Tucson Museum of Art are five very historic buildings in the downtown area. These are under the purview of TMA and maintaining them. It is expensive. These buildings need some repairs, but what can you give? Bring us up to date on where we are with that, Jeremy.
Sure. I think one thing that's a misconception is TMA actually has a great relationship with the city of Tucson right now. We are in constant communications with them about how we can both, you know, help support these structures. Adobe structures are not new structures. They take constant care and maintenance. And one thing that the museum's been doing is a series of fundraisers and other programs to really bring these historic structures into the sort of the limelight, into the public view. And, you know, we've done things from a current restoration of Casa Cordova, where, the, of course, the infamous El Nacimiento is and is currently open and on view. And in addition to that, you know, kind of, you know, raising fund by fund, kind of a grassroots effort to really put dollars into these buildings. This is also, you know, this is the history of Tucson. This even predates the city of Tucson. So for us, we feel very strongly that TMA going forward is not just an arts institution, but a cultural institution that supports the long-going and ongoing history of this community.
How does the fundraising look for what I've seen figures saying $500,000 is needed? what's your thinking on that?
Well, we really go building by building. I think, to lump it into one sum is not necessarily a fair assessment. But these buildings, they're in great shape. They're in no potential danger of collapsing in any way.
They have good bones.
They have great bones, that's for sure. In addition to that, the museum is committed to really seeing these things, last, basically forever. And that takes, ongoing maintenance. And we've done a lot of things too. We've cleaned up our property over the last 10 months, definitely putting some long-term investment, xeriscaping, which I know is a big conversation here in the desert. I always thought it was sort of odd coming from a tropical environment, seeing this lush green grass.
South Florida to the desert, right? Yeah.
So I think we're, overall, we're definitely committed to seeing, again, project by project, fixing these up as we go along.
Give us a summary of some of the primetime exhibits going on this winter and into the spring at TMA.
Well, sure. I think right now it's a great opportunity to stop into the museum and see a current exhibition called The New Westward, which was curated by Christine Brinzar Glasser, curator of Western art. And it's really a fantastic exhibition to really look at sort of how transportation basically transformed the West through artistic measures. And in addition to that, we're looking to February, we open up a brand new exhibition curated by Dr. Julie Sassi called Body Language, Figurative Art in Modern and Contemporary Art. And that's really a great exhibition that is going to explore figuration in modern and contemporary terms. And it's a wonderful exhibition that includes both works from our own collection and from some noted artists and collectors in the area. So it's a great way to sort of re-engage yourself and acquaint yourself with the museum. And then come October, you're going to see a brand new institution.
Oh, that's going to be very interesting. And you've also got a great restaurant on site, too.
Absolutely. I don't think anyone
I've
can...
enjoyed the food there. Pack on a few calories, but really good eating downtown.
Sure thing. You know, Café à la Carte is part of the experience of TMA.
It is.
And Mark and his team, they do a phenomenal job, incorporating into everything that's happening at the museum.
Well, thank you, Jeremy. It sounds like you're on the right path, and you're kind of hit the ground running here. And so, really, your one-year anniversary will be coming up when?
March 28th is
March
my one-year anniversary.
Unbelievable. Yeah. I'm glad we could introduce you, though, to our listeners. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
All right. Jeremy Mikolajczak, the CEO of Tucson Museum of Art. We'll be right back on the Buckmaster Show talking about one of my favorite subjects, animal welfare issues. Back after this. Tucson now has its own Creole restaurant, named after the classic New Orleans cocktail. Sazerac Creole Kitchen and Cocktail Parlor is located in St. Philip's Plaza at River and Campbell. The New Orleans-inspired menu includes a full range of gumbos and much-loved beignets. See you soon at Sazerac, open daily, 8 a.m. to midnight at St. Philip's Plaza.
Traveling is more than just the flight. It's the whole experience. In money saved, in time saved, almost 60 flights take off every day from Tucson International Airport and announcing the newest destination, New York.
American Airlines, now boarding nonstop to JFK.
Daily nonstop service to New York starts October 7th with connections across the Atlantic and throughout the Northeast. Now with 18 nonstop destinations from Tucson, you can get there from here. Travel smart. Travel TUS and flytucson.com. It's the way to go.
The Regional Transportation Authority works with its member jurisdictions, the business community, project neighbors, and the broader community to deliver transportation projects promised in 2006. This collaborative effort is a model of diverse interests coming together for the benefit of the region. This spirit of regional collaboration helps us address the mobility and safety needs in all of our communities. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Hi, Suzanne Miller from your Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona, here to remind you to start with trust and look for the BBB accredited seal when searching for a product or service. Did you know you can request a quote directly from any of our accredited businesses? With over 3,000 accredited businesses in Southern Arizona, you will find a business you can trust. Whether you need a product or service from one company or an entire industry, go to tucson.bbb.org and start your search today.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
On a changing planet, the University of Arizona's Biosphere 2 has been diving deeper and looking closer while energizing, innovating, conserving, and advancing science on an unparalleled scale to better understand the natural systems around us and to inspire our future generations. For 10 years now, UA Biosphere 2 has explored our planet's future. Come, explore it yourself. Open daily, biosphere2.org. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. My friend Barbara Brown is with me. Barbara is chair of the steering committee of the Pima Alliance for Animal Welfare, commonly referred to as PAWS. And Barbara, I want to wish you a very happy birthday, first of all, to start off with.
Well, thank you so much. You know, I was looking back at my calendar and I was here a year ago on my birthday. I think we've got a tradition going.
We do. It's the second annual visit of Barbara Brown on her birthday. It's a very much a pleasure and an honor to have her. The PAWS biannual meeting, Barbara, is coming up on Friday. There's some very important subjects on the agenda, and everybody, by the way, is welcome to attend, correct?
Absolutely. This Friday from 8 to noon at the Abrams Public Health Center, 3950 South Country Club Road. We do these meetings every 6 months, and we talk about different issues. And at this particular meeting, we're going to be talking about puppy mills and what's the latest here in Arizona, what's going on. And you know, the puppy mills are under the USDA. So yet another reason why it's important for folks to pay attention to who's being appointed to different positions. And we're also going to be talking about breed labeling. Liz Finch is coming from Best Friends Animal Society to share some of the newest information about that.
How does breed labeling now, and how could it impact adoptions at, say, at Pima Animal Care Center?
Well, you know, our friends up north at Arizona State University did a study. The woman's name is Lisa Gunter, and she did this study in March 2016 called What's in a Name? And she showed folks photographs of dogs that were labeled pit bulls and then dogs that weren't labeled pit bulls, same photos, by the way. And it turns out that the ones without the labels were more attractive to people because, you see, pit bulls are seen as less approachable, less trainable,
right,
more aggressive,
right,
and that sort of thing than other types of dogs. But did you know that pit bull isn't even a breed?
No, I did not.
Yeah, it's for a whole group of animals. And so they've gotten kind of a bad rap. But, you know, other breeds have gone through the same kind of thing. You know, for a while it was Dobermans, mm-hmm, you know, and that
German
sort of thing.
German Shepherds for a while.
Exactly.
Were very much out of favor.
Exactly. But, and yeah. So what happens when these animals come into the shelter, and if the shelter labels them as mm-hmm a pit bull, mm-hmm, their chances of leaving the shelter are reduced.
Diminishes their time and probably extends their time
exactly
in the shelter.
Exactly. So the Arizona Animal Welfare League, which is a shelter, you know, up in Phoenix, they read this report and adopted a totally different approach. So what they did as you walk through their facility, you will see signs up about each of the animals, and they're much more like dating profiles, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they'll say, "Hi, I'm Myrtle. You uh-huh, know,
uh-huh,
I would love to go home with you.
That'd be great with kids.
You know,
or
I
whatever
love to go running,"
yeah,
and you know, that sort of thing, which makes a really huge difference.
Well, first impressions are very important, whether it's meeting meeting people or meeting animals.
It's so, exactly the same.
If something's on there that might not even be that accurate, it can certainly make a difference. So that's going to be talked about at the meeting.
Yep.
I also want to point to the big adoption event that is coming up in April.
Oh, I know. We're so excited about it. It's on April 15th, and it's going to be down at the Expo Center. It's a wonderful event. We've done it for several years. Adopt Love, Adopt Local.
And it's been doing very well.
Oh, yeah, it has. Mm-hmm. And so what I love about it is it's kind of, if you're interested in adding a new family member, it's a great place to come to talk to people who work with various types of animals. So the Greyhound Rescue folks will be there. So you can talk to people about what is a Greyhound personality? What are they like? Do they need a lot of a big yard or that sort of thing? And the Beagle Rescue and, you know, all the different groups will be there so that you can go from booth to booth to booth. If you're interested in adopting, you certainly can. We will have animals there. The Humane Society usually brings a lot of animals down. Pima Animal Care Center has a lot there. There will be kitties there. We actually set out a different space for cats because they like it a little quieter. So we have like the cat room and folks go in and we've had great success with adoptions, but also just an opportunity for people to meet different types of animals to see if it would fit their family.
790-2040. Let's go to our live line. Sue would like to make a comment or has a question for Barbara Brown. Go ahead, Sue.
Hi there. I just wanted to comment on pit bulls. A lot of landlords won't allow them due to insurance purposes. But the insurance company takes a little bit of responsibility there, too. So if they're labeled something else, they will have a better chance of having a home to live in.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. You know, so we really would like to get away from these labels and have them be accurate. You know, a lot of these animals that are called pit bulls are really Staffordshire Terrier.
Yeah, they're not even pit bulls. But
that's not even a real name.
They've been given this label, and it's not accurate, and it does hurt the adoption chances.
And you know, it's really interesting, your guest prior to me is from Dade County,
right.
And they have a ban on pit bulls there, and it's really quite devastating. People are moving to Broward County now. So Dade County is losing the tax revenue. They're losing citizens because they don't want to give up their family pets.
Right, so they're moving next door to Broward County.
Exactly.
Yeah, to get away from the ban.
The same thing happened in Denver when they put in a pit bull ban. People moved or rehomed their animals temporarily outside the city limits, and now it's been lifted. And so it really is something that doesn't work. You just take each animal on its own personality and go from there.
I think 2016 has really kind of been a watershed, a milestone year, Barbara Brown, for animal welfare issues in our community. We have all sorts of, we've got a new home for Pima Animal Care that will be the groundbreaking's been done. The building will begin. We had some people on. We had a spokesperson for the Humane Society there in the midst of their big fundraiser for a beautiful new facility. Things, I believe, are moving in the right direction.
Oh, they absolutely are. And the last information that I got from Pima Animal Care Center is there were 160 dogs there. Okay. Now, you and I remember when there were 500 dogs there.
Oh, very well. Even more. Yeah. I can remember some times when there were up to 750.
Absolutely. And so we're really moving in the right direction with spay-neuter, with these two new facilities, which are going to be fantastic. And the fact that our community can support these efforts shows the how wonderful our community really is.
How's the feral cat program coming?
Oh my gosh, it's awesome. So the inventory of cats that are in all the shelters has gone way down because these animals are being spayed, neutered, returned.
And not reproducing.
And not reproducing. It's made a huge difference.
Go ahead.
We have a bequest. The Pima County was given a bequest, which is really awesome. So the program can continue for 2 more years after the grant, which is really, truly wonderful and will make a huge difference for these cats.
And I think someone wanted, I don't think we're going to have a chance to get this person on the air because we're about out of time, but sometimes people, for whatever reason, do have to surrender an animal. What is the procedure for that, Barbara?
So you would contact the Pima Animal Care Center and talk to them about taking your animal there, and they do have volunteers who will try to help that animal get adopted.
Why don't we bring you back before the big April event to reinforce the big adoption events? But again, if folks would like to come out, Best Friends is going to be there, and the Humane Society of the United States representative at the event.
Right. Absolutely. Tomorrow? On Friday.
On Friday. Yeah.
So 8 to noon at Abrams Public Health Center, 3950 South Country Club Road. If you're interested in animal welfare at all, we'll be having updates about the big event. And the Human Animal Bond Working Group. We've got some folks. There's some really exciting stuff. So come on down.
Best Friends has been good to our area, haven't
they? Oh, they really, really have. And so has PetSmart Charities and mm-hmm. Maddie's Fund. I mean, we've really attracted some national attention, which has been fantastic.
And again, if folks heard about the April event, would you quickly give us the date of that again, Barbara?
Well,
Brown?
It's April 15th. We won't forget that date because it's
tax day. Which happens to be the 17th
yes,
this year, but we still
in traditional in our
we
head.
We know certainly April 15th.
Yep.
All right, Barbara Brown, it is always a pleasure. And again, a happy birthday.
Thank you so
your
much.
Second annual visit to the Buckmaster Show, spending a portion of your big day with us. And we are very honored you do so.
Hey,
thanks, Barbara.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, coming up this afternoon, Mike Shaw and Ray Allen put together their program, Mike Check, both of them big animal supporters. I know Ray certainly is with his dog. Coming up tomorrow morning, Wake Up Tucson 6 to 9, Talking Culture, one of our new local talk shows from 9 to 10. And then me, Bill Buckmaster, back with you tomorrow for the Buckmaster Show. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be right back with more talk with Michael Medved coming up next. Have a great afternoon and evening.